Hi, Tom Dunnick from Wisconsin. I thought your closing comment there was fairly poignant. I'm just kind of curious. In Wisconsin, we've taken a really different tact on our ELR, in that I guess maybe we're a little bit closer to New York's philosophy, in that we'll accept virtually anything in whatever format people will give it to us. We take it one step further in that we also do all the LOINC and SNOMED assignments as part of our regular data brokering for our own surveillance system. In retrospect, do you feel that being a little bit more rigorous in your dealings with your providing labs has been a good thing or a bad thing? And I say that because I know for us, because we're doing this brokering for 20-plus feeds right now, we have basically two of us that manage the entire system, and when you're doing it day in and day out, you get to be really pretty darn good at it, and you take that liability away from potential providers.
I think it's a really difficult choice to make, because there, like I said, there's really good things about it, there's really bad things about it. Some folks may say, well, I think Pennsylvania's just lazy, because we chose early on to force folks to do that. Now, when we had a consultant, when the consulting firm was in and they were building the system years ago, like I said, we evolved from let's do blood lead because it's easy, and everybody just used one LOINC code. And it's the LOINC codes weren't as bad as when we started doing SNOMEDs. That's when things really got ugly. Honestly, we don't have the staff and the time, though, to sit down and do all of that to the extent, like I mentioned, the local code mapping. Our system's set up to handle that, and we could. If you'd send me a spreadsheet, we could sit down with our program area experts and say, okay, what do you want? You know, we have very specific codes. I mean, I have extensive spreadsheets of what we want to have received. Things will end up in our error queue, and I'll go look up the codes that were used and compare it to the spreadsheet to say, you know, this is non-reportable or it's reportable. We don't want this version of it. So we work back to the labs. We have put a lot of responsibility on the laboratories to upgrade their systems and to be compliant from that perspective. And the bad side of that is it's dragged out a lot of the onboarding process over years of time, so that we are accepting far few clients. We have far fewer reporters than we could have if we were more accepting or if we did more of the code mapping on our end. Now, if we implement our 2G plan as we hope to do, we're going to be able to take care of a lot of that because of the MSS or the new version of RAPSI that's going to come out that's basically going to have, as I'm told, is going to have a lot of the same functionality there for the code mapping stuff. So we could be a little bit more efficient with doing that, of just importing spreadsheets, if you'd give me that. So I don't know if that answers your question. Yes and no. I mean, it's a philosophical approach, I think, and it's based on your system. And you're right, you become an expert whether you want to or not.
Hi, my name is Adam Reedhead. I'm from New York City Department of Health. I had a question, and then I guess I'm an epidemiologist, a cootiologist. So I had a question to the panel, really, about it's incredibly impressive what's going on here. Certainly, ELR not being a priority to many folks, a lot of it has gotten done, and I'm really thankful to all of you for that. I wanted to ask, you know, primarily we were talking about transporting information between two places and getting it in and getting it in the right codes. And I, as a user of the data, am much more worried about the quality of the data and are they valid in the LOINC, are they out of LOINC, what's going on there. And I know that our colleagues at the state have done an incredible job in interfacing with the labs at all times. I just wondered, going back to our question about the stick, I wondered about the carrots that various people have been offering, and I wonder if there's a larger question here about whose responsibility is it really to deliver quality data? Is it the lab's responsibility, or do you feel like it's the Department of Health's responsibility to clean it? Where along the line? Because I know at least where I was working in HIV surveillance, we did a lot of, we received like over 1 million records a year. So we did a lot of cleaning ourselves. And, you know, post this is like many layers of cleaning down. So I just wanted to know in the panel, what you guys thought about who had the responsibility for quality?
I think all of us have state regulations that require, it's mandated reporting for specific conditions. And then within that is where it comes into the codes of actually defining, well, what is that condition? In Pennsylvania, my common tagline is, I'm just the crossing guard on the ELR side. I see all the messages come in. We have a very extensive error queue system where if I don't know your code, it goes to an unknown queue, and then I personally police that and try to figure out where it's supposed to go. If there are certain demographics or requirements of the message itself missing, but I know what code you sent me because I can determine which of the five program areas it goes to a, like the EPI queue or the HIV queue, and then those folks are responsible for policing those. But I can call a lab and yell all I want and threaten all I want, but again, I'm the crossing guard. I'm standing there yelling at you, like, you have to wait for the sign. You know, don't go. And that's all I do. I stand there and I yell a lot, wave my arms. And the program areas, really, we've been trying to put more ownership on the program areas to actually get out there and call these folks and say, look, you got to call that hospital or you got to call that lab and tell them to get their act together. If they're not sending stuff, I don't want to be the guy calling them up and saying, you didn't upload a file yesterday. What happened? You know, we don't have a lot of time for that. We're working toward a better system. But the Bureau of Laboratories in Pennsylvania is the licensing agency or the oversight for labs and stuff like that. But getting them to carry a bigger stick is also hard because they're short on staff and they've got a ton of stuff to do. So in Pennsylvania, it's just we try to encourage them the best we can and you be as nice as you can and try and establish a good relationships and, you know, you guilt people out of being a friend into doing favors for you. So it may take time, but that seems to be the best approach we have.
I'd say it all depends on who you ask. You know, from New York State, I mean, as far as data cleaning, I get asked all the time by the programs. And you guys,
right?
You know, all over the place, you know, hey, this lab's not doing a good job, you know, or you guys aren't sending us the data well enough from eClairs into our system, you know, what can you do about it? But we also get, hey, this lab here needs really bad help. Who's going to take care of it? So, and a lot of times as well, you know, if it's your data, call them up and, you know, tell them what you need. Let me know about it, though, so that I can look for it when it comes in to validate. Otherwise, I'll take care of it myself and call the lab and say, hey, here's the problem that we have going on. So, but a lot of times it is. Depends on where it's coming from. You know, all the program people, they want the data clean as it comes into them, no questions asked, or else they're going to put up a fight. You know, and but when you ask the labs, a lot of times, and I know there's lab people in here somewhere, you know, to them it's, we're going to send you what we got, and this is how clean we can get it, you do the rest. You know, so it is all depends on where the question's coming from as far as how they can get answered.
And in Kentucky, our setup is just a little bit different than New York and Pennsylvania. Our local electronic laboratory reporting system, when we built the local codes into the database, there was a major cleanup. There was left 100 usable codes. And with the director of the laboratory being a pathologist, she re-reviewed everything as a scientist map. And of course, the test order codes, approximately 100, and that means there's many, many more result codes. So the scientists would map, Dr. Mayfield would take a look at that, and once it was signed off on, then that was mapped to the electronic, the local electronic system, and that's what's pushed into LOINC and pushed to the exchange. So
I think one of the things you may not consider all the time is once somebody's onboarded, it's not over. Even from a CSV lead file provider, somebody new does the file, or somebody just misses a comma, misplaces one thing in that seventh comma or column, and then suddenly the whole file's bad. And you have to, you know, and it ends up in your accused, you've got to go back and police that. Or even big labs, thank goodness for Mayo and LabCorp, they send us emails saying, hey, we're changing, I'm sure most of you guys get that too, we're now changing this code to this one. And first thing I do is I run in a, you know, validate that we've actually got it mapped and that we want it and all that stuff. It's the labs that don't tell you, they change things. And the STD program calls you up and say, what happened to my titer values from such and such a lab or something, because somebody in the lab end just decided to change the way they do things. So it's still that ongoing maintenance of the relationship, even years later where there's not been a glitch, suddenly somebody changes something. Going to rely on JA, but we'll have to.
I just wanted to make a couple comments on data quality. There's actually two aspects of data quality. There's technical data quality, a lot of things that you can do algorithmically to decide whether or not you've got completeness and accuracy and that. But the other part, which is much more difficult, and you alluded to, is the semantic data quality. And the farther away from the source where the data is generated that the mappings are done, the higher the probability of semantic mismatch or semantic inaccuracy occurs. And this is where the problem is almost intractable, because the laboratories themselves have to make themselves knowledgeable enough about the standards. And anybody who's done WANC mapping or SNOMED mapping knows that there's a lot of subtleties in mapping of those codes to what really is meant at the laboratory level. Until we get the laboratories trained to appreciate those subtleties, we're always going to have a certain amount of variability in the quality of the semantic data that we have. And so I don't have a solution. I'm just noting the fact that there are those two aspects that have to be considered.
I mean, I don't have a lot of experience in this area, but it sounds to me like a lot of situations where you have this community out there, but they're not getting feedback about what's going on, and they don't see themselves as a community. You know, I mean, if Laboratory A has adopted a new piece of equipment and is now reporting on a new code, and then Laboratory B, you know, is going to change over, they should call the other guy and say, Joe, what are you reporting on? You know, there should be some sort of synergy,
well,
it seems
I
like.
I can address that in one word, Quest.
Okay.
We have 5 Quest labs who don't have a clue about each other. They have centralized IT that makes IT policy changes on a whim, new firewalls, new whatever, affects everybody. But a lab that onboards for hepatitis, I can't extrapolate that across the other 4 labs. I have to start completely from scratch with each one of those laboratories. And their IT staffs are not connected, their SME staffs are not connected. I mean, and we've done stuff to network them over time and say, look, you know, Chantilly's doing this, can you just call them? Or Horsham's doing such and such. So they're a great example of that, of where there's this family or this community that are completely walled off from each other.
Well, I think also we have to remember that laboratories operate on a very narrow profit margin, and they really are competitors, even though they do such a wonderful job of collaborating and everything.
Can I get to the other side of the room, Jane?
That's why everyone needs to sit in the first 10 rows.
Mark was going to hide a prize under a chair, but I don't think he did.
I threatened. I told you I was going to bring in a bunch of crepe paper and just block off the back of the room, but next time.
Hi, I'm Robbie. I'm an acoudiologist as well. I'm an end user of PA-NIDS, and I'd just like to speak about the data quality that our colleague from New York was talking about. And I do think it is on our on the side of the epidemiologist, the end user, because at least in our part, I know we do quite a lot of trend analysis with the laboratories, and for STDs we did find drop-offs in certain laboratories, and it was the onus on us to identify those drop-offs and then working with the state to contact the laboratory, the hospital, where those drop-offs were going. So there's so many reports that were coming in through PNEDS, it would be difficult to even expect our state EPIs to find those kind of drop-offs, especially in an area like Philadelphia. So at least for those quality issues, I know I've talked with Mark about certain various test issues where we didn't even understand what they were giving us. And I do appreciate some of the free text that comes in where we can at least extrapolate where we think they're going. And ourselves have developed relationships with some of the laboratories to contact them directly and get more insight in what they're actually trying to send to us or what kind of tests they're sending to us. And then we will also go back to the EPI and be like, well, we think that that's what we're trying to send to us. Send them a paper lab result, and then maybe reconsider some of the links that they're sending or some of the verbiage that they're using. So we do take it upon ourselves to work
then
with
them.
Then
they call me and accuse me of having a bad system flaw or something, which happens. I won't mention any specifically, but they do happen. Yeah. We find things. And there's great feedback like that does expose flaws.
I don't want to impose on people's lunch hour. I think you had, let's try to just maybe take one or two more questions.
Thanks. This is Kate Gooden from Florida. I wanted to pick up on something that you mentioned before about trying to track down some of these demographic data quality issues with second and third party labs. Can you discuss some of the successes or challenges you've had with actually getting some of that demographic data? Because that's one of our biggest data quality issues, is the total lack of demographic data because it's being transmitted through so many different parties to where it actually gets tested.
For us, again, I won't use an unnamed lab in Philadelphia. I was onboarding them for childhood blood lead, and we went through the typical process, build your message, send your message, you know, then start sending me live data. The messages were perfect. And about 3 days before we had established our go-live date, they sent me one last batch, and there were no demographics. And I couldn't get the program guy, so I called the IT guy. And he's like, well, what do you mean? We've never had demographics. And I said, no, there have always been in these test messages. He's like, no, this gets farmed out through the system to another lab, and we don't send demographics out, so they don't come back, and our system doesn't reconnect the two files. So we were getting this stuff, and found out the lab guy, the program person, was handcrafting these messages to correct them so that he would pass onboarding. So on the spreadsheet there, a big red box at the end with a nasty footnote. You can't really...
Yeah. One of the things in New York that we did to address that issue of missing demographics is we created a little tool where the lab themselves, they can go in and we can give them up to whatever days we want to after the report was submitted. They can go into the system, bring up a list of all reports for that time period that didn't have any address, and they can click on it and put in the address manually, and then on our disease surveillance side, they've got an update address button, and it'll pull from ELR that new address. We've got two facilities right now that use that rigorously. They submit the files automatically overnight, and then in the morning they've got some data entry staff to go in and update that for us. We've got some others that they use it every now and then when they feel like it. So, but that, for a good portion, that has worked for us. But once again, that's dependent on the lab to actually be able to go in and have staff to do that. So. They're sending the initial ELR message, and then they manually log into our system, pull up that record, and we have spot text boxes, and they type into the text boxes the address, and then hit update, and it updates the record in our database.
And I'm
so
sure
that we don't get another ELR message a day or two later with the address, and then we got to decide, is it a duplicate? You know, what do we, how do we handle it? That type of stuff. So, but we do also have labs that do that. They'll send the updated record a day or two later, and we have to make that choice. Is it a duplicate record? Is it, you know, what do we do with it?
And it comes down to what your demographic requirements are for your system. I mean, ours are like birth date, first and last name, a legitimate birth date, an address. We need a zip code. It could be the patient zip code, the physician zip code, or the lab zip code. So we use like a three-factor check there. The greatest offender are HIV reports. You know, they come in, and a vast majority of them are totally useless because they have just placeholder information in the first and last name, if anything, and they almost never have a birth date. Those that fail. I mean, I don't want to say it's a vast majority, but that's, of those that have no demographics, it's usually HIV. And that program area has got such a volume, they can't possibly chase them all. But blood lead comes in without a birth date, that thing lays in the error queue for an hour, maybe. And those guys are, you know, going out there and getting that information and following up on that. So it's really, for Pennsylvania, program by program issue.
And for New York, the biggest offender for us is actually our state public health lab. So because of the fact that it goes from provider to hospital to reference lab to our state public health lab, that address doesn't always follow. So, you know, that's our biggest offender for us as far as what do we do about that. And then we got to hunt back and find the initial record that might have come in and try and do something that way.
And you can't drive the business decisions that these independent entities make on who they farm out to. And as they, like some of the Quest Labs, well, we send all the data, we just don't get it back.
Right.
And again, but they don't merge it back together either, so.
I'm going to interrupt for a minute because we're running into lunch, and I'll speak for the panelists and say they're willing to stay here for another 5 or 10 minutes even and talk if people want to, but I also don't want you to be starving and wishing you could leave.
But only if people come up front and
yes,
sit down.
Yes, only come up front. And I wanted to thank everybody for attending this session, and thank you to our virtual attendees, and thank you to CDC for hosting this. And don't forget, 7 o'clock tonight, after you've socialized at the Big Band event, come to the ELR meeting if you're interested. Thank you, everybody.